Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's obviously My Girl by The Temptations, featuring a absolute heartbeat of a bass line from James Jamerson, one of the greatest sidemen in all of American music, born on this day in 1936.
And he is the bass player here.
He was the house bass player. They had more than one. He was the primary house bass player at Motown Records. He died in the 80s. There was at some point, maybe in the 80s, there was this big Motown collection that got released. And one of like the famous record reviews ever, back when people cared about record reviews, the Girl Marcus one sentence review of this, the Motown story, was the history of James Jamerson's bass playing in 50 songs.
Is bass playing can be that transcendent? Aren't bass players sort of like the... Yeah, come on, man.
It depends on the kind of music. In funk, it can be very expressive, and some jazz stuff. But a lot of times, it's more subtle. Uh-huh. That's that rhythm bed of things. But yeah, I mean, you know, Duck Dunn, James Jamerson, okay. Great bass player. Shout out to the bass players of the world.
Shout out to the bass players of the world. So yesterday, after you left the studio, Ja Morant, he deactivated his Twitter and X account.
Let Ja be a leader that we can all follow.
So this
really something we should all do.
Instead of just causing a burst of admiration across the city, and for only the small group of people who care about such things, it caused alarm or concern or whatever. And then it did, and I saw you tweeted about this as well, that one can wonder about his place in this offense, right? Like,
it gets... My reluctance, this is why I prefer writing, like when they allow me to write too many words.
Right.
Because when you're reduced to like 100 whatever characters, and sometimes even on radio conversations, even right. on yes. something as elevated as the Jeff Calkins show, right. observations get flattened and elevated and heightened, you know? And so nothing can be a small deal ever.
Right.
I think it's a small deal. Right. I don't think it's a big deal. I think Ja sort of placed in the offense. His usage rate is still really high. It's like, you know, to throw out numbers people don't understand, but it's like a 30% usage rate, which is really high. Is it the highest of his career? No, but it's super high. The minutes are down, and so that's the depressed like game averages that people glance at for like everybody,
right?
Pretty
what John was just saying was, is that, you know, his best years, he was averaging 27, 20, right, 28 right. points a game. Now he's averaging 20.
So if you care about that, and I've got to reach a point where I barely look at game averages, but that is a reality that, like, the game averages stuff is not there. And he's not the leading scorer. Jaren's the leading scorer. And he used to be the leading scorer. And so in some sense, offensive pecking order scoring role has changed. His assist numbers, like, again, per possession, because the minutes are down, they've been higher. I think now they're more even, but they're right there with the best of his career. I think his defense has been better. That's basketball, too. And the Grizzlies' performance in Ja Morant's minutes, they're on their plus-minus, their net rating, their on-off, however you want to boil this stuff down, it's the best ever this season. So Ja Morant has played well, and the Grizzlies have played well with Ja Morant, and Ja Morant's been productive. But he's not the leading scorer. It's the scoring average is lower. And I do think the way he functions within the offense has shifted a little bit. And I think it's a reasonable thing to wonder about both, like, how has that impacted Ja Morant, and how does that impact the team as you play better teams, as you play playoff basketball? I think it's legitimate.
Well, I think, okay, so to take those, let's take the second one first. What we actually had seen sometimes in playoff basketball is they struggled in half-court basketball.
This is the reason they're changing their offense, right?
Right.
It's tricky.
So it's not necessarily.
That's right.
This could actually be.
That's right.
It could be impacting his mood and perform numbers negatively, but impacting the Grizzlies' performance, we don't know, really,
right.
Positively.
They're off for all the hand-wringing about the quote-unquote new offense, and maybe I contributed to that by joking and putting it in all caps and a little TM when I write about it, right, the new offense. The new offense is working, mostly. Like, not only the numbers good, just like they were 3 years ago in a different system, the half-court numbers are better, which is what they want. And the numbers are really good, even with these colossal turnover. Even the drag of these turnovers, right, it's still good despite that. To me, it's two things. One, I think they need balance and options. And I think that's what they're pursuing. I don't think, as much as we've talked about the new offense, I don't think from the jump, you go back to what Taylor Jenkins said in training camp, and I was standing right there. I talked to him last week before a game about sort of the menu shifting of the offense, and he mostly picked up what I was putting down. This is not some messianic embrace of this radical new system to the exclusion of all else. That is not what's happening. I think they need a balance of stuff. The new stuff that they're doing that's working, they still got to be able to go to pick and roll, to go to other traditional stuff, to have balance, and to go to what works in specific circumstances and specific matchups in playoff basketball. But another part of it, I think, and this is less tangible, this is getting in sort of like the soft stuff, because I had someone, a smart fan on Twitter, say, well, you know, their offensive efficiency and pick-and-roll plays is blah, 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 blah. I'm like, that's fine. But that's sort of Ja Morant's comfort zone, right? And if you do enough of that's part of what he does in the course of a game, my guess is that helps him, his comfort level throughout the game, right? And you get additional benefits
So this fan was pointing out that the offensive pick-and-roll is not particularly efficient.
Relative to the other things
they could be doing. But so this question is, should you be doing some of it anyway just to
As much as I like the stats, it's not robots and spreadsheets. And so I do think that, you know, you get – and Desmond Bane, too, by the way, who had a really good dynamic with Steven Adams running off screens, off ball, and all kinds of stuff, right? I think, you know, that come off the screen with the big and attack the paint is so core to what Ja Morant's had success in, that even if that per possession is not as successful as some other stuff they do in the offense, I still think it needs to be a component. And by the way, I think it will be. I think this is going to grow over time. Part of this is Zach Edey's a rookie.
Right. Overall, you believe his performance this year has been?
It's been good. It's been different. I do think it feels more erratic lately. And the thing about Ja, and again, we get into, like, you know, we're doing armchair psychologist in a radio studio or whatever, and, you know, you try to be gentle, stepping on that kind of stuff. But the reality is, Ja is just sort of a moodier guy. When you think about the three stars of the team,
right?
Not only is he a moodier guy, he's a less predictable moodier guy,
right?
It's not as simple as, like, you know, Ja played great, he's in a great mood, or he played bad, it's more complicated than that. And I do think he's sort of an emotional player who plays off of energy, plays off of emotion. And I think that impacts the quality of his play in a way. It's a normal thing, but it's more so with him than it is with other players. And the spirit has not quite been all the way there lately, it seems to me, as someone watching the team.
It is funny. You're exactly right. It's just, even when Desmond Bane was struggling, we're not worrying about or fretting about or analyzing about or thinking about his mental state. Like, that's just not something that even enters the discussion.
There is a temperamental genius quality to John Morant.
Right.
But the genius is there too, right? It's, you know, I don't say those things don't have to go together. You can be a non-temperamental genius, but in Ja Morant's case, he is a temperamental genius.
So do you, again, I'm stepping into all this, do you think he plays less joyfully than typical, than he once did?
I think that aspect of his game has been pretty up and down this season. Of course, his availability has been pretty up and down this season. That may be a part of it too in terms of catching a rhythm. But I do think the best Ja, to me, it's not about the scoring as much.
Like, and it's the joggles, man.
It's the joggles. One of the things I wrote about today is that Ja Morant's scoring average is higher in losses than wins. The Grizzlies, the best Ja Morant is not necessarily Ja Morant who takes over games as a scorer. It's the Ja Morant that controls games via combination of scoring and playmaking, right? And who has control of the game and who has – and I do think the Ja who plays with joy or defiance or even maybe the best thing is the joyful defiance, that is the best version of Ja Morant. That's the version where he is at his best. That's the version that gets the crowd going. That's the version that gets the teammates going. That's the Ja we want to see.
Yeah, there have been a couple games this year where you have even identified, like, this is the best version. This is what we hope to see.
They played Milwaukee this season, and Giannis Antetokounmpo in that game was like Godzilla coming out of the Pacific Ocean. He was like 18 of 21. It was ridiculous.
Right.
Giannis Antetokounmpo was overwhelming in that game.
Right.
Ja Morant controlled that entire game.
Yeah.
That was the best Ja Morant. He had like 21 points and 14 assists and whatever, you know.
Do you think he will? I mean, who knows? The shooting is obviously an issue.
Sure.
He didn't have an offseason, though, either.
That's right.
He's a, you know.
Yeah, I don't even know what the numbers are right now. I'm sure they're around 30%.
Yeah,
but,
about 30%.
Yeah, it's an issue. I like that the defense has gotten better. I think that's really important. And I think there's better shooting. I think the team shooting, 3-point shooting numbers of this team are better this season than it's been the recent norm. I think there's better shooting around him a little bit more now. We'll see what happens after the trade deadline, right? Like, Luke Kennard's part of that. But also in the front court, like, you got... I mean, Zach Edey can shoot threes now. So, like, everyone but Brandon Clark is a threat in the front court to shoot threes, like a real threat. They're not, you know, none of them are, like, dark or whatever, but they're all, like, real threats, like four of the five, and I think that's helped in terms of the space. And Jalen Wells is a much better three-point shooter than, like, the typical Grizzlies small forward over the years.
Obviously not a surprise. Jalen Wells and Zach Edey both in the Rising Stars game. We knew that, but I don't think we knew it when they were drafted. That's for sure.
You'd imagine Edey, but Wells.
Right. Wells is never in a million years.
No. In fact, you almost wondered, like, if that was a stretch at 35 or 37 or whatever it was, right? This guy who had, like, played, like, one year of major college basketball or whatever. Yeah. It was not someone who, like, really was being talked about. I'm still surprised. I'm not surprised that the shooting, that was sort of the book on him. The book on him was, like, really good shooter, a limited athlete. And by the way, I do think he's a limited athlete. But he's overcome that with tenacity and length and smarts to be, like, a really good defender as a rookie, which is really hard to do.
Right. So the Jimmy Butler stuff just does not go away.
It won't go away until he gets dealt somewhere, yeah.
And so... Like, today it was over at The Athletic, Zach Harper. What's the one trade you'd like to see happen? I want Memphis to say bleep it and go for Jimmy Butler. Jimmy, Ja Morant, JJJ, Desmond Bane, and a whole lot of grit still left to grind in Memphis. Butler might not want to go there, but Memphis could pull it off and make everybody a believer.
That's fun to write, but you can't.
You can't do that.
Again, I endorse a Jimmy Butler trade under certain circumstances, but that is not.
What's funny is that no one nationally has even really written about the sort of financial part of it.
It's wild to me. Here's the thing. I have a new favorite Grizzlies trade target as of yesterday. And this is strictly me making stuff up. There's no sourcing. There's no rumors of this anywhere. This is someone, when I wrote about trade stuff a month ago, it's someone I thought about. I took a look at and I decided this guy is not going to be available in the trade market. And if he is, there's not a deal for the Grizzlies. Thinking one-to-one. So here's how maybe that's changed. One of the reports yesterday was that, you know, the Warriors are back in the mix for Jimmy Butler, right?
Okay.
Here's what I want. If the Warriors trade for Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins has to be a part of that trade for to make salaries match. Wiggins has 3 years left on his contract. There's evidence that Miami doesn't want contracts to go out that long. I want the Grizzlies involved as the third team and flip Marcus Smart and John Conchar, or maybe Marcus Smart and Luke Kennard, and get Andrew Wiggins. That is the trade I want to see.
Okay. And what's the logic? First of all, what's his money? What's his?
It's like 28 or what? It's like $20 million less than Jimmy Butler for each year as you go forward. He's 30 years old, so he's 5 years younger. He's actually as good as Jimmy Butler, but he's 20 million cheaper, 5 years younger, healthier. He's been healthier this season. He had sort of a down period because he had some off-court family stuff or whatever. Right. He's been good this season. He's averaging 17, 18 points a game, 38% from three. He's a plus defender. This guy, by the way, was maybe the best player in the NBA Finals a few years ago.
It feels like there have been highs.
There have.
Very high highs.
Right.
And then ebbs.
Well, yeah, if you trade Marcus Smart, John Conchar in a 2025 first, you're not getting a superstar. There's going to be something. There's issues. Like, there's issues with Jimmy Butler. I think Wiggins would be, and again, I don't think he's available just like the Warriors are trying to get rid of him, but he's going to have to be in play if they trade for Jimmy Butler. And he's a guy who would add a veteran 3-and-D guy who's playoff proven, who would fit right in as a major playoff cog for the Grizzlies. So that's my new target.
And the financial implications of that going forward would be what?
It'd be fine next season because if you do a Conchar, it's basically an even trade in terms of next season. And if Kennard, whatever. The issue would be the third year, and that third year would overlap with the first year of a new Jaren deal. But it's a player option. Maybe at that point you talk to him about, like, you know, let's opt out of that and we'll do something. Who knows?
Would it have implications?
Would you
be moving on from Santi? Would it have implications?
Not necessarily. Maybe, but
you have less need for Santi.
Yes. Yeah, maybe, but not necessarily. But also, Wiggins, I think, is better, you know?
Right, he is better. Well, there you go. We got a new trade target here on the Jeff Calkins
Show.
That's
just me making stuff up.
Chris just making stuff up. That's part of what's difficult here, though, is that as you look around, there haven't been obvious... Grizzlies have to do something. Someone said to me, they got to do a consolidation trade. Well, everyone wants to because you get a better player in a consolidation trade.
Right.
Those are everyone's favorite kind of trade. I give you all these quarters for a buck.
Yeah.
Who is the question? It's always the question is who.
The consolidation trade often works in favor of the team doing the consolidating, which is why it's harder to do. Like the famous version of that is the Suns got three good players or the Sixers got three good players for Charles Barkley. That worked out great.
Who were they?
Tim Perry and, like, I don't know, I'm making up. It was nobody of note, you know?
Bucks once got a David Meyer and whatever else for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, I can remember the 70s. So, yeah.
Typically, if you get the best player in a basketball trade, you win the trade.
We did also, though, have the news that De'Aaron Fox wants to be traded and that he wants to be traded to the Spurs, which does raise the question. It highlights to me this issue of what's the window that's available for the Grizzlies, because if De'Aaron Fox is going to wind up and San Antonio and Wemby is going to be the other monster who came out of the Pacific, like, is there a create urgency? What did you make of the De'Aaron Fox thing, and what would San Antonio give up to get De'Aaron Fox?
I haven't read anything anyone else has written about that, so I would just be spitballing. But it wouldn't be hard to do. I mean, because they have all the picks, and in terms of matching money, it's not going to be hard to do. Like Keldon Johnson would be a contract in there. There's other Zach Collins, whatever. Right. You can match contracts. The question is the value and how much of that is draft pick, how much of that is player. Is Sacramento going to ask for Stephon Castle?
Right, does Stephon Castle go the other way?
Are you willing to move him? Are they going to ask for Devin Vassell? I think the Spurs would probably like to keep both of those guys in this scenario. To me, if you're trading for De'Aaron Fox, you'd probably be willing to move Castle. Whereas Vassell, who plays off ball and is a little bit older, makes more sense to keep. So I would think like Castle and a first or two with contract match is maybe what that deal looks like. And then you're asking, like, what are you doing if you're Sacramento? Like, if that's your deal, why not just trade Domantas Sabonis and just, like, blow it all up and start over? Because what are you really accomplishing at that point?
Speaking of Domantas Sabonis, tomorrow night we'll learn about Jaren and the All-Star team.
Yeah, before tip-off on TNT,
Before tip-off on TNT, and then we got the Grizzlies game. So big day for Memphis tomorrow. Are you increasingly convinced, or do you believe Jaren will make it?
I think it's likely. I think Jaren should be starting this game. I think a lot of the smart people who a lot of the nerds are looking at this, like Hollinger was saying today, and he was like, you know, he was the top reserve pick in the West, and like There's somebody, Sam Vecenie's podcast, he had Jaren Sixth in the MVP vote.
Right.
You know, Bill Simmons did his trade value thing last night. He had Jaren 12th in the whole NBA.
Whole league.
And so, and I think the coaches picked the reserves. And
they're smart. They know what's going on.
And so
right.
I feel like, yes, he'll make the team. But I don't think it's like a guarantee. Because of Sabonis, because of Şengün, because of Jalen Williams.
Right.
Lots of good players.
You've got your weekly review of what's happening in film, the film scene here in Memphis. What is happening in the film scene here in Memphis?
So there's a movie opening that, you know, I think it had been held back because they were hoping to get, like, Oscar nominations. And you go wide in January and everyone knows about this movie and that just didn't happen. But it's pretty good. I think you might be into it. It is a sports journalism movie. It's called September 5th. And it is about ABC sports broadcasters and how they handled the hostage situation at the 1972 Munich Olympics. And it is basically a journalism procedural. It's told entirely from the vantage point of the producers and reporters in this, like, dark room who think they have come to Munich to report on the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And suddenly on the fly, they have to figure out, how do we report on this other thing that's happening? And it's basically a TikTok journalism procedural about that. It's pretty good.
Is it actors playing these people, or is it,
it's,
you
a
said
mix.
There's real film.
Yeah, and so the central action of the movie takes place behind the scenes, like in, like, you know, the broadcast room or whatever, where the producers and the executives and whatever are all there, like, making decisions, right? Like, you know, if you ever seen broadcast news, it's not like it's the Holly Hunter character or whatever who's, like, you know, behind the scenes.
Do you like that movie?
I love broadcast news. Well, yeah. All-time favorite. Albert Brooks, broadcast news.
So good. Yeah.
One of my heroes in life. So this guy, actor Peter Sarsgaard, plays Rune Arledge, the famous ABC executive. And so it's all actors doing that, but they mix in the actual broadcast footage of the real time. So Jim McKay is Jim McKay in 1972. And so they recreate the behind the scenes, but they show the actual broadcast as it went out over the air. It's pretty good. Not great.
Will be widely distributed?
It's widely distributed now in terms of going out across the country, but I think it's like in one theater here, like it's at Ridgeway or whatever.
Right.
It was a movie that, like, went out, I think it debuted at the Venice Film Festival in August, and people thought, oh, this could be an Oscar contender. And so you hold it back and you go to the Oscar release plan, which means you get released in New York and Los Angeles in December to qualify. And then the nominations come out in January, and then the whole country gets to see this.
I see. And they didn't get any.
It didn't happen.
The other one that didn't get any nominations was The Challenger. Is that what it's called? Challengers.
My second favorite movie.
Yeah,
of the year.
The tennis movie.
I love Challengers. It's too much. It came out too early in the year, and it's too much fun. And so I guess people decided it's not a serious thing.
It is fun.
It's a blast to me. And it to me, Challengers and Anora, the two movies last year, there's a certain just synergy of filmmaking, like the brew of the edit, all the elements, the brew of the acting and the writing and the editing and the camera work and everything just sort of clicks together. And there's a rhythm that comes out of that when everything clicks. And to me, those two movies clicked from first moment to last. I'm not saying they are perfect, but they are fully realized. They are totally in control of what they're trying to do from the first second to the last second. They just have a rhythm to them. I think Challengers way, way underrated.
And what else in terms of, I saw The Brutalist is out here now. You can go see The Brutalist in theaters.
Brutalist is expanding wide. It's going to be basically in every Memphis theater starting tomorrow.
Are all of them pretty much?
Like, I mean, most of them. Most like 10 different, yeah. 10 different theaters.
10 different theaters. Yeah. No, but I mean, most of the films that are Academy Award.
No, most of them are disappearing. So is it Thursday today or is it Wednesday?
Today's Wednesday.
You got 2 days left, today and tomorrow, if you want to see Nickel Boys in a Memphis theater.
That's at Ridgeway. I know.
I don't know. If you want to see Nickel Boys in a theater in Memphis, you got 2 days.
Really?
Sing Sing, you have 2 days. The Substance, which came back, you have 2 days. And a movie that I love that got no nominations but should have, Hard Truths, you got 2 days. In fact, I may go do that today or tomorrow because I haven't seen it in a theater.
All right. You've done another entry in your Essential Memphis Library, but I think we're going to talk about that tomorrow. So we'll do that tomorrow. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. When we come back, Sam Hardiman's going to join the show. Jeff Cockinger, 92.9 FM ESPN.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman, covers the city for the Daily Memphian on Twitter or X at Sam Hardiman. Although I think you and Ja have both deactivated your accounts. Is this true, Sam?
I haven't deactivated my account. No. I just haven't been using my account. Okay. But there's a difference. So because it gets noticed if I deactivate my account, much less than Ja, but it will get noticed. So it's just dormant. I'm out there looking. I'm being a looky-loo, but I'm not posting.
All right, well, you had a big story yesterday at the Daily Memphian. It's funny, because it literally came as I was wondering, you know, with all the other stories we have going on in the city, I was wondering, and I understand, like, the effort to oust Wanda Halbert is still in some degree in play, but I was actually wondering, how's the county clerk's office doing? Like, if you went over, they popped over there, are things running smoothly, whatever else? And then in the midst of, as I was musing about that, the story, you write the story, city auto fee hike not collected for 7 months leaves $7 million pothole. Explain what happened, Sam, or what didn't happen.
Yeah, so first I'm going to take everyone back to June of last year in the city's kind of complicated budget season. And so the city of Memphis was facing a large shortfall in their budget, and they needed to raise revenue. People who own homes, such as yourself, Jeff, received a 49-cent tax increase on their property taxes. The reason that tax increase was not bigger was because the city council, just before they voted to hike your taxes, voted to hike your car registration fee from the $30 it had been for more than a decade to $60.
Yeah.
The problem was, no one started collecting it, the $60. And so I went and paid my tags on Monday. My tags were due at the, I was going to be tagless, and given the propensity of MPD to actually pull people over these days, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go get my tags done. And so I go, and then I look at my receipt in the city fee, because I'm a city resident, was $30. And I'm like, that doesn't seem like the right number. So I started making some calls. And, yeah, for about 7 months, Clerk Halbert's office has not collected the $60 fee. Clerk Halbert, in a phone interview with me yesterday, said that should change on February 1st, which is, I believe, Saturday. And believe me, I will be hanging out at one of the clerk's offices on Monday afternoon, on the 3rd, and I will be checking to see if some city residents have actually been charged their $60 fee. This created a $7 million or so hole in the city of Memphis budget.
That's just staggering. So a couple questions first. First, just totally irrespective of this, how was your experience of getting your tags renewed?
Well, well, actually, Clark Albert asked me this, and I said it was fine. Like no one is going to rave about going to a government office to get your tax money. Like this, yeah. the ceiling is not high for the interaction. Right?
No,
like,
right.
It's not high. Right? Like it's kind of like going through TSA. But it was fine. Like it was one of these things where like I had changed my address, so I thought I had to bring all this proof of address.
Right.
And it turns out that because I had changed my address appropriately online, like I thought I had, I didn't need to bring those things. So it was actually like I could have used the kiosk.
I see. So, but you saw a real person. Which one did you go to?
I went to the downtown one because I live downtown, and it also lets me, you know, wander around government buildings, you know, and that works for me.
So, okay. So you did. So experience was fine. Okay. And then literally you discovered this story because you were redoing your tags and you noticed you were charged $30?
Yeah, I can't give complete credit. Like someone had said, maybe we'll go look and see. And I was like, well, I got to go get my tags.
Anyway.
You know? So I was like, all right, I'll go do this.
Okay, so whose fault? Yeah. Okay, maybe that's it. What would normally be the logistics of changing this? Like, how would it normally happen? So the city council decides to raise the fee from $30 to $60. How should it have been implemented? And what do you see as the what were the why did it not get implemented?
Yeah, so I would say it's a complicated blame game. And I'm not going to pass any blame here, but I think there are portions of responsibility that lie with multiple entities here. Okay, that is some speak there. Great sentence.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, you know, the city council passes this ordinance. Okay, because it has to do it through ordinance. The mayor signs it. What happened with the ordinance? And I got the corrected version just now in my inbox about 10 minutes ago. The fee schedule that was passed on June 24th of last year. Okay, was actually the incorrect fee schedule. Okay, so the city council had to go back and actually change it about a month and a half later to get the appropriate fee schedule. So that delayed it by about a month. Okay, and then essentially the city of Memphis, after that's corrected, the mayor has to sign it. It's just like if the city council passes a bill, the mayor has to sign the bill. That's how this works. It's, you know, Schoolhouse Rock all over again. And then next, they contacted the clerk's office, the mayoral administration, and said, hey, these fees have been changed. And this is about late September now, okay? So we're now already a couple months into not collecting this fee, all right? But then it is not implemented by the clerk's office, okay? And so then there's the issue of, well, if you're the city administration and you know that you need this revenue, and it's not being collected by the entity you have no control over because the clerk's office is not part of city of Memphis government. They don't, like, the mayor has no oversight of the Shelby County clerk, the city mayor, no oversight of that clerk. There is this window of time of, like, well, why is this taking effect allegedly on February 1st now? Why didn't it maybe take effect on December 1st or November 1st or October 1st, right? And so that's where I think things get really unclear as to why this sort of lingered as an issue, and really because it impacts taxpayer dollars. Like, the city has had some favorable revenue outcomes these past couple months. They've gotten more interest from their bank accounts than they expected. More people have paid higher property taxes than they expected. That's good. So maybe the hole isn't so big, but you also, just because the hole isn't as large as it could be because of this mishap, doesn't mean that extra money that you could have that's now papering over this hole couldn't have been used for other things.
And Jerry,
so
Jerry,
that's yeah. that's the issue.
Jerry Green, city council member who sponsored this originally, said she's been flagging the issue with Paul Young's administration for months, at least according to your story. So, and contrasted it to how it worked on the county side, where it went in place on July 1 and was up and running by September.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no question
again,
in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so that's unfortunate. And it's supposed to be fixed by this weekend. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you need to get your car re-registered, slip in there today and you may be able to get a deal on it, just like Sam did. All right. We do public service here. You had a story, Sam, about the money that the city is spending on legal bills. Tell me the story there.
Yeah, so I'm in the city of Memphis, as we've discussed several times on this program, and you can see at the Daily Memphian, you know, our coverage, you know, really constantly. The city of Memphis has been embroiled in several lawsuits, okay? They have real legal liabilities. And so what happens with that is you need attorneys, and attorneys ain't cheap.
Right.
They're not. When you hire good attorneys, when you're involved in, you know, litigation, you know, maybe Jeff Calkins isn't going to unretire from, you know, practicing law and come back for you, but there are other attorneys out there. And yeah, the city of Memphis has spent, you know, over the past 4 years, we put in a records request, I did, for the city's legal bills over the past 4 years. And this spans two mayoral administrations. I want to be clear. It's 3 years of Jim Strickland. It's really his, essentially, most of his second term, and then the first year of Memphis Mayor Paul Young. Okay, and it's just written. It's gone from about $2 million in 2021, and you can read the story on our website, dailymemphian.com, to about $4.9 million last year. And so that's real money. The largest recipient of that city revenue right now, because it's revenue from the city. When these legal firms are billing, they're billing the city taxpayer. The largest recipient of that is Memphis mega firm Baker Donaldson. They've received about $1.6 million last year from city taxpayers. And so, I mean, you know, we're talking, you know, 15th man on the NBA roster kind of money right now for one firm.
2021 was $2.6 million. 2022, $2.8 million. This is according to the chart in your story. People can read it at the Daily Memphian. 2023, $4.6 million. Last year, $4.8 million. And it is interesting. I didn't realize this. Tanera Gibson, who is the Memphis City attorney, is still a partner at Birch, Porter & Johnson, which gets the second most business. That's the way that this works, though, right? You know, it's common for the city attorney to continue to be working at a law firm as well.
Yeah, it's been common for as long as I've been in Memphis, right? Because her predecessor, Jennifer Sink, you know, worked once at Baker Donaldson. Her husband worked there at the time. Her predecessor, Bruce McMullen, who's the managing shareholder at Baker Donaldson, when he was city attorney, was still a partner at Baker Donaldson. And so a city official gave us a statement for our story and points out that the city attorney, Tanera Gibson, has foregone her equity in Birch, Porter & Johnson while she's in the mayor's office, okay? Which means she's not deriving any profits from the revenue that's going her firm's way, okay? Like, she is giving up what is probably likely. I don't have their books. They're a private enterprise. But probably real money and her share of the equity. So she has foregone these profits.
Talking to Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. Finally, Sam, you had another story about MATA. What's happening there?
The cash remains dwindling. MATA has put in some pressure on Memphis Mayor Paul Young, who has said to them, hey, I'm going to find you money so you don't have to cut service any further. We're going to find you further city cash. Well, if the mayor is going to find them further city cash before they run out of cash, he kind of needs to do it next Tuesday, because that's the next Memphis City Council meeting. The city of Memphis is the appropriating body. They essentially say, yes, you can spend taxpayer dollars. And so they would have to agree to this, and they have to do it by next week, because MATA will have to stop paying certain vendors by February 10th. So they would need it, and then that's the next city council meeting, is February 4th. So that's the situation. It's not great. It continues not to be great for the city bus system.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm glad we didn't discuss the Bruins and Sabres.
I'm sorry,
we didn't discuss
the Bruins and Sabres. Thanks, Sam. You know, I told Sam we might discuss the Bruins and the Sabres. The Sabres beat his Bruins 7-2 last night.
Who's counting?
But I'm not the type to rub it in, because I don't want to be on the receiving end of that, you know? And I could certainly be on the receiving end of it. And so you got to – this is all in the interest of self-protection. That's really why. It's not that I'm so nice.
Yeah.
It's really that I just don't – I know my time is coming because I'm a Bills fan.
You actually are playing defense.
Yeah, I'm playing defense here. Best defense is really just defense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're buying a house, Josh Heisa would be the person to call. Josh Heisa and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Here's the phone number, 901-461-8147. I've seen more houses, a lot of people in the spring. They get the houses ready, get them on the market. Now is the time, because people are going to be, you know, summer is when spring and summer houses look great in the spring. And then, you know, this is when you're going to be, if you're moving, this is when you're going to be doing it, because you get moved when the kids are out of school in the summer and all of that. So this is the moment. And Josh Heisa would be the person. Among other things, He'll make an instant cash offer at full market value for your home. You can actually pop over to the website and you get an immediate offer, immediate sense of how much your house is worth. Flexible fees, no upfront cost, let you out of your contract anytime. It is Josh Heisa and the team at Keller Williams Realty. The phone number, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. One of the nice things that's happened, Jeffrey, that we haven't talked about is Seth Henigan's at the Senior Bowl. I haven't been looking at the NFL for obvious reasons, but I can look at the Senior Bowl. I was looking today, Jeffrey, at the best free agents that were available. And you know, I think the best thing about the best free agents that were available on the ESPN?
It doesn't talk about Sunday.
No, well, that's true. But they're all good AFC teams that aren't like T. Higgins is one.
Yeah.
Right?
Trying to move some guys to the NFC.
What's his name? The guard, the Tennessee guard who plays for the Chiefs, Trey Smith.
Yeah.
Is like two. The tackle from the Ravens is three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, okay, this is okay.
But Ronnie anyways, Stanley.
Ronnie Stanley. Seth Henigan is not only at the Senior Bowl, if you just put the word Seth Henigan on Twitter, from people who are not affiliated with Memphis, among the best passes we've seen during the American practice thus far comes from Memphis QB Seth Henigan. Everyone knows I'm a big dart guy, but over the last few weeks, I've stated on my show and to people in private that I've become a fan of Seth Henigan. Another person. Seth Henigan is my favorite QB in the draft. Looks really solid out there. Here's another one. Memphis QB Seth Henigan turning some heads early here at the first practice at the Senior Bowl. Seth Henigan is the most underrated QB in the draft. Seth Henigan is super fun to watch. Loyal player, didn't go chasing the bag at a bigger program. One of my favorite QBs of the last few years, but he never gets the attention he deserves. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Seth Henigan impressing in Senior Bowl practice, day one, et cetera. Now, this other person says, in terms of QB play overall, I'd put them in this order. Jackson Dart 1, Seth Henigan 2. The others, by the way, are Dylan Gabriel, Tyler Shaw. Jalen Milroe.
Yep.
Riley Leonard.
Yep.
Taylor Elgersma.
Yeah, he's the D2 kid.
He's the D2 kid.
They've been doing that recently.
I hate to say it, I don't want to get too excited here. But it feels like Seth Henigan could very well be drafted, doesn't it?
Yeah, the last 2 weeks have been very positive for Seth because he was a late add to the Senior Bowl, and that's a good thing.
Late add to the Senior Bowl, then he goes to the Senior Bowl, and we'll see. Again, the game itself doesn't normally matter,
right?
But the practices absolutely matter.
And the interviews.
And practices and interviews, I think you could be seeing Seth Henigan sixth round.
I think so. I do have questions about how many quarterbacks are even going to get drafted this year.
Well, I think there's that, but what you often see
is the guy is there's six
that,
or seven.
Is that there's a first and second round guys,
mm-hmm.
and then there's usually,
last year we just had first round and sixth round,
right? And then there's a big gap,
correct?
Because let's be honest, in the second, third, fourth, fifth rounds, you're getting corners, safeties,
guys,
guys that can play for you next year.
Yep,
you're not wasting a freaking third round pick, typically, on a quarterback. Because, like, they're probably not good enough to actually play for you next year. And you can get someone who could be playing for you next year.
Correct.
And so, what you're going to do is hang out and you're like, I got 2 sixths. I'm going to throw one of those at a quarterback.
Well, and I think a big part of it also, because what you said is true, but also, I think people have realized, like, we're just not developing quarterbacks. Like, you're drafting them and you're playing them.
So, I think Seth Henigan drafted.
I mean,
that's kind of
getting
cool.
Invited to the Senior Bowl was massive for him because I think he was originally.
And good for him, by
the
way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Like, well, Paxton wasn't Senior Bowl because he wasn't a senior.
Correct.
Right?
And then, well, it used to be you had to actually be a senior, and then you they started know. Letting draft eligible
Did,
guys.
Of the other Memphis QBs.
I don't remember if Riley went down there or not.
Brady?
I don't think Brady did. I want to say Brady was the Shrine Bowl.
Well, that'd be a good story. That'd be a nice story. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Chef, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Coach Hurd joins them today, 125. Justin Moore will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurt's going to join us during hour number two. It's Wednesday, so Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.